understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play. And he don't wanna change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. Some folks say they're gonna hang him so high, 'cause you just can't do what he did. There's some things you just can't put in the minds of those kids. As we celebrate mediocrity, all the boys upstairs wanna see how much you'll pay for what you used to get for free. There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play.
All right, here we go, folks. It's the radio, Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. Remember to support the network if you can. The chat rooms, incendiaryradio.chatango.com, free for all. And then you have the number 2, incendiaryradio.chatango.com. That one's monitored by Murr. I believe still. And then you got Hooli's blog, blogspot.com. Usually post the archive in the morning, commercial free. And he did this, he did the show I did with Blackbird 9 last night on the Snack Shack here on RBN. So him and I did a rapid fire hour together where we just ran through a ton of stuff, and it was really good. It's worth listening to. Hour blows by fast, I'll tell you what. So before I guess get into all the drama and baloney and the things the psyops were witnessing, I was screwing around on the TV, right? And there's an app called Tubi, T-U-B-I, and there's a documentary on there, Running Down a Dream, about the life of Tom Petty, from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And that was one of the songs I just played, one of his later records preceding his death. And a lot of lyrics really kind of stood out to me listening to some of this, because you know, he went up against the system early, kind of earlier in his career, and about the price of one of his records coming out and so forth. So he went up against the industry, and then towards the end of his life, the things that he was talking about, especially lyrically, pretty fascinating. It's almost George Carlin-esque. And so I kind of did a dive when he passed away at 66 years old, and I said that on – I accentuated the 66 on purpose, because, you know, a few years back it kind of hit everybody when he died mysteriously, and the L.A. coroner's office said it was multi-organ failure due to a cocktail of opioids. You know, you've got Michael Jackson, you got Prince, you've got Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters just died, what, last year in Colombia. You got Tom Petty. You've got too many of these music people to even name, and I was just going off of some of the ones on the top of my head. And it's, you know, you've got the concept of sacrifice. You've got the concept of the demonic contract, where a young person basically relinquishes, let's just say, autonomy over their soul, and sometimes actually literally, especially dealing with some of the creeps in these industries, such as movie, TV, music is a huge one, because music is such a powerful manipulative tool of evil that this is one of those. And if you get into the kind of apocryphal, let's say, concept surrounding Satan / Lucifer, and then you get into Pan with the pipes and the Lucifer, where it talks about his pipes, and music, and a lot of people tie that in with music. And so with Tom Petty in this this documentary, you can find it on Tubi, and you can find it right on the internet. It's called Running Down a Dream. It's almost 4 hours long. But it's definitely a kind of a trip down memory lane, as well as enlightening, because I didn't follow his career that closely. I wasn't a fanboy of Tom Petty. I was off into like heavy music and that sort of, not that I didn't like a lot of those songs growing up as a kid. You know, he had so many songs, and some of them were kind of heavier, and the other ones were light and, you know, straightforward kind of Southern style rock. But I just got some notes here from this documentary, and I've got some of the stuff. So, Mr. Producer, have clip three ready to go, because this, I actually sent the producer the link off of Tubi from the movie. And so, one of the callers last week, I was in a conversation with one of the callers, and I'm sending the producer a message right now about when Bob Dylan was on 60 Minutes, Robert Zimmerman was on 60 Minutes, and he's like talking about the bargain, going down to the crossroads and all that stuff. You know, so many people have talked about the crossroads in Mississippi, where people go to do this bargain, and Bob Dylan talks about it, and numerous other rock and rollers and kind of blues type people. And so, and Bob Dylan's like, I made this bargain with this thing long ago. And then the other guy who's dead now, the black guy, he's like, yeah, you tell me who you made the bargain with? The chief commander on this earth. And he's like, this earth and the world you can't see and all that. You know, we've all seen this ad nauseum numerous times. But he toured with Bob Dylan, as him and the Heartbreakers were basically his, Bob Dylan's band, for a whole tour. They did some work together. And then Bob Dylan's like, hey man, why don't you, let's tour together. And so the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers were the band for Bob Dylan for a minute. And, and this producer just seen the dislikes on the last DJ video, you know, is 666. That's kind of interesting. But, you know, he took on a bandmate named Howie Epstein. Okay. And then you get into this thing with the Traveling Wilburys, where George Harrison, Roy Orbison, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Tom Petty, and Bob Dylan were all part of this super group, the Traveling Wilburys. And if you're my age, you'll remember these guys from your younger days. And the only ones left alive are Bob Dylan right now and Jeff Lynne. So Tom Petty's dead, Roy Orbison's dead, George Harrison's dead. And Jeff Lynne, for those of you that have studied kind of the esoteric side of the music industry and ELO, there's a lot of satanic kind of underbelly to some of ELO stuff, and the backmasking and all that sort of strange stuff. So, but what's fascinating is, you know, he wrote that song, I Won't Back Down, and then Johnny Cash did it, and a lot of people use that song on bumper tracks and various, radio programs. But there was a video that he did. It was Into the Great Wide Open, and I watched the whole thing again today, and it was a storytelling video with Johnny Depp in it. And Johnny Depp is a person that I've done deep dives on. His strange relationship with Marilyn Manson and Damien Echols from the West Memphis Three, who did this satanic child sacrifice and all this stuff. And then Eddie Vedder and the girl from the Dixie Chicks. All these stars got these kids off on this ritual murder they did to this little boy. Very, very strange stuff. And that, and then so Eddie, Johnny Depp, Marilyn Manson, and this Damien Echols weirdo that was really the mastermind of the whole satanic murder, they've all got matching tattoos. And I've covered this on the broadcast for those of you who've been listening for a long time. But you can dig up and find these videos where people have dug into this. And now this Damien Echols guy, like, you could see him on later interviews, and he's got the sigil of Lucifer tattooed onto his hand. Real strange stuff. And him and Johnny Depp are allegedly still buddies. And, you know, Marilyn Manson, same tattoo, sigil of Lucifer. You can look that up and post that in the chat room if you want. But they've all got these tats on their freaking hands and stuff. But Johnny Depp is the character, basically a small town boy in the song Into the Great Wide Open, where he goes out to L.A., catches a bus to L.A., goes to a tattoo shop, and then he gets this dagger tattoo on his arm, and he meets a girl, and then they shack up in some flea bag hotel, and there's like a witch that runs the hotel, and she sees him strumming the guitar and all this stuff, and basically she puts a spell on him type thing, and he becomes like the most massive rock star in the world. And next thing you know, he gets involved in the industry and all this stuff, and then he kind of snubs this kind of witch figure, and she gets all pissed, and she, you know, puts a negative hex on him, or whatever you would want to call it. Notice the term hex, hexagram, six, anyway. So he loses it all, and then basically he goes back into this tattoo parlor, and the whole story starts over again, and there's another guy that's getting the tattoo, and blah, 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 blah. But Johnny Depp, as we know, is a very prominent character, but he opened a club called the Viper Room, okay, on the L.A. and down on the Strip. And guess who was the opening act that opened the Viper Room? It was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And this is the club where River Phoenix OD'd and died and all this stuff. So there's this very, very interesting kind of occult kind of dot connection was going on as I'm watching this documentary. And I don't know why I started watching it, but then it's like all this stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot some of this, and I didn't know some of this. But Mr. Producer, let's play the first part of clip three. Go ahead and play that. And I don't know if this takes a second to load or not, because it's on a...
During the Dylan tour, someone burned my house down. A few feet from where my daughter Kim was sleeping, fire started.
I was in seventh grade, and I had spent the night at someone else's house, and I was trying to call my parents because they didn't come to pick me up. The phone was busy, and we had call waiting, so I knew something was wrong, and so I called Benmont. He said there had been a tragedy, and he came and picked me up, and it was my mother's birthday. And
there was supposed to be a barbecue that day at their house.
So people were kind of
turning up while the hoses were going and the fire was there.
It was very surreal. You know, the guys from the Eurythmics and all these people were walking up the driveway with presents, and there was fire trucks and the press and my dad in his pajamas, and I just started to cry. And my dad put his arm around me and he just said, you know, this is no time to do this. You can't get upset. You know, we got to hang in here together, and we're all we got. It's only stuff. And I thought that was cool.
We're lucky to survive with our lives there, and you really appreciate being able to be alive was one thing it did for me. I was glad just to wake up the following day.
I went round his house and stood with Tom and the kids. It's very difficult standing with a family just looking at the embers.
All his memorabilia, everything he had collected since he was a little kid, all that was gone.
I lost pretty much everything I owned there. I didn't have shoes when I came out of that. I sent the family to a hotel. So at the end of the day, when I got to the hotel, Annie Lennox, Dave's partner in Eurythmics, was there, and she'd bought everyone a new wardrobe, which, you know, kind of broke me up. Those were the clothes, actually, that I wore for the next few months. Then they told me it was arson, and you could have knocked me down with a feather. And I thought, well, no, nobody would do this. It can't be arson. But then the arson investigators walked me around the property and showed me that someone had poured something around the house and lit the place on fire.
It scared us all. Why in the world would anybody do that, especially to somebody like Tom Petty, who's just cool?
Well, the funny thing is, right away, people started confessing all across the United States. You know, guys in New Jersey confessed to it. And, you know, it makes you feel really good to be alive if you sort of escape assassination. You have to keep your eyes open. But I'm not going to live in fear, because if I do that, they've won.
Shortly after.
All right, go ahead and stop it there, Mr. Producer, and then forward to that second part. And he's talking about Howie Epstein, who joined the band later, their original bass player. He, I guess he just wasn't working out as far as the technical side of the house or something of this nature. So they bring on this Jewish guy that played with Del Shannon in his road band. It's Howie Epstein. And I've heard this little thing, and I was like, yeah, this something triggered him. But basically, see, Tom Petty, he kind of started doing some work with Jeff Lynne without having the rest of the band involved. So he started to move kind of into a solo kind of sphere for a minute with the Wilburys, and then he just became Tom Petty on a couple records. And then so you had a bunch of the band members that didn't like that. And let's go ahead and listen to that second part.
One time Howie came down to the studio, and he was sitting outside the door looking really irritated. I came out and I said, well, we're going to get to the bass really soon. And he goes, it's not that. I don't like this song. And I was like, you don't like the song? He said, no. And I said, well, if you don't like the song, you don't have to play on it. And he's like, right, bye. It was Free Falling.
She's a good girl, loves her mama, loves Jesus and America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses and her boyfriend too.
All right, you can stop it there. So anyway, a huge song, Free Falling, and Howie Epstein didn't like it. You know what my theory is? She loves Jesus. Yeah. He mentioned that name of what the Jews call Yeshu. And oh, Howie triggered old Howie, didn't it? He don't like that song. So anyway, But it's just, it's a very interesting deep dive with the connections with Bob Dylan and Johnny Depp. And, oh, and then towards later, guess who becomes, as with Johnny Cash, his big producer? It was Rick Rubin. Okay. Famous producer, extraordinaire. Of course, another tribesman. Just a very, very interesting life. And he, you know, he dies at 66, was attempted to be probably sacrificed, him and his family, in some burnt offering. Very, 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 very interesting. So I know I ate up some minutes, but I was like, you know what? I want to dig through this on the air because it's just fascinating. And you guys know that I get into some of that esoteric stuff with the music industry and Hollywood and sports and all that stuff. So I came up with a new word, and I don't know if somebody has already came up with it or not. And if they did, I subliminally could have absorbed it, but it came to me the other day. Chinafornia. Okay? Chinafornia. Okay, so we've got all of these strange articles, okay, about the California. Okay, this one's on Zero Hedge. California advances bill to help shoplifters steal, right? And then you've got other ones, kind of like proposed California bill would brand parents abusive if they refuse to affirm their transgender children's identity and let social workers take youngsters into care. All right. So, and you've got other stuff with, and I'm trying to find it now, but you've got other stuff with California as far as like all the big hotels, they're getting the hell out. You know, Hilton, a whole bunch of them. They're like, we gotta get out of San Francisco. And so we're seeing this, let's just say, concerted attack on the state of California. Like, you're talking real estate, you know, huge, huge real estate money. And it's a purposeful decimation of this area. And I've been talking about this for so long. It's like they are torpedoing it to make it so unlivable that somebody is going to come in and get to buy it up or absorb it because of debt. Think about China. Okay. Now, I was listening to Mike Adams and the Liberty Man John Moore from our network. He was on with Mike Adams in the last few days. And Mr. Producer, this is clip 4, if you want to get this one ready. And there's two little segments we want to hit. But John Moore was on with Mike Adams. And so let's listen to a little bit of this, because this kind of ties in with kind of where I'm at here with California. Go ahead and play the first part of clip 4.
About 4 weeks ago, one of my private sources told me about the F-16s being taken out of mothballs at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, Tucson, Arizona, and flying out of there, dozens of them. We didn't know where they were going. Update a week ago today, I found out it's not just F-16s, but it's also C-130s, AWACS, A-10s, other aircraft, and we now know where they're going. They're going to the Philippines and to Europe, most likely Poland, we don't know, but Europe. A week ago today, I had my monthly John Moore Show meetup, and one of our attendees used to do maintenance on C-130s and A-10s and so forth. And I asked him, I said, how long does it take and what does it cost to put a C-130 back into active service? It's been mothballed. He says, John, it's a team of 260 men and women. It takes about 3 weeks, and it costs about $1 million for one aircraft to be put back in service. Now, you multiply that times hundreds of other aircraft, and you're looking at some very serious money, to say the least. An additional complexity, Mike, is the active duty Air Force doesn't have the pilots to fly these aircraft, or do they have the people to do the maintenance? So they're going to be taking people that have been retired. About, I don't know the percentage, but about half the commercial airline pilots are retired Air Force pilots. They'll be brought back. They won't particularly like it, at least most won't. And same thing with mechanics. Retired Air Force mechanics and men and women who are in the Air Force Reserve will be brought back on active duty to service these aircraft that have been brought back into service.
So hold on, if you don't mind me interrupting, you're saying a lot here already, and I know you're summarizing the intel that you you had presented earlier this week. I know you've got more to add, but I just want to point out the ramifications of what you've already said are that the Air Force is restoring to active duty service potentially thousands of aircraft, combat aircraft of different kinds. You're talking about essentially the economic destruction of the commercial air traffic sector of our economy, which includes package carriers, FedEx and UPS and so on. If all those or half of those pilots are called back into active duty because they were former, you know, pilots for the military, then what's going to happen to air traffic also? I mean, that's another question. And then you're talking about all the mechanics and so on, but the run-up to where this is headed, why would the military be doing this? And I know you've talked about that.
That's right, Mike. First of all, if it was a training operation, they may take two or three C-130s out of mothballs, two or three AWACS, maybe a couple of C-1, these aircraft, just for training purposes. We're way past training purposes. They're getting ready for World War III, and they've been doing it, we don't know how long, probably for most of this calendar year, maybe half or more of last year. Because of the complexity, the length of time, the difficulty getting the parts they need. It's a massive logistical undertaking. It's not something, if you were getting ready for war, you wouldn't do this 3 years or 5 years before they were needed, or even 2 years. I would say 2 years or less is the time frame that they anticipate needing these aircraft. Obviously, the Philippines would be used against China, and obviously Europe against Russia. It's something people need to be aware of, Mike, so they can make their own preparations. It's been widely publicized about all the Chinese men coming to this country illegally across our southern border. Russians have been here for decades. We don't know exactly where they are, what all they are doing. I've been reporting on it myself as far as that goes. But there will be saboteurs in this country that we will have to deal with, and of course the chance of EMP weapons being used as well, at least localized EMP.
Now, can I interject a question here, please? We've already seen with the Ukraine situation, we've seen the U.S. depleting its domestic supplies of artillery rounds and drones and many vehicles and so on that have been sent to Ukraine, and some still in progress of being sent there. Most of them now, of course, being rather efficiently destroyed by Russia, by the way. But with this, with these additional aircraft that were previously mothballed being readied for active service and then, as you say, shipped to the Philippines or Europe, then doesn't this further leave CONUS here more vulnerable in case of an invasion, even an internal activation, as I've called it, of the military occupants that have been placed across the United States? How doesn't this make America more vulnerable for its domestic defense?
All right, go ahead and stop it right there, Mr. Producer, and then we'll forward that to the other part when we come back from the break. I know we're coming back on the break. And it almost seems to me and many others that this depletion and then moving all this stuff away from the United States, yeah, they're leaving us ripe and open for some sort of a hit. It's almost like Pearl Harbor when they moved a bunch of the good stuff away before they knew the Japs were going to bomb it. All right, we'll see you on the other side of the break, and we'll pick up the second part of this clip.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Public Broadcasting Network. So we're in the middle of this Mike Adams and John Moore interview. And so we listen to the first part, and this is where kind of John Moore gets into the China stuff. And this kind of ties in with me with California, due to the fact that the penetration of all of those politicians with Chinese, and you know, this goes all the way back, you know, to really the Clinton administration. I mean, I've got books on the Chinese stuff with the Clintons back from the 90s, you know, Chinagate, that whole thing with all of our military and, you know, kind of trade secrets and all this stuff that just got carte blanche thrown at them for basically peanuts, just as campaign money, and Charlie Tree, the bundling, and all the people that stayed in the White House during the Clinton administration, just, you know, the weirdest stuff. And, you know, these people are outright communist international apparatchiks. And so, you know, some people don't think that Putin and the Russians are still part of the Communist International, but then you look at BRICS and this sort of stuff, and the Marxists in South Africa, you look at China, you look at India's kind of always in the, you know, on the fence. They ride the fence. Brazil, you know, you just had Bolsonaro tossed from power. You got this Lula goofball in there. And then you've got this cozy relationship with Putin and Maduro of Venezuela and some of the other Marxist leaders in Central and South America and so forth. So, you know, I'm still out to lunch on this, but the Communist International through the Chinese has really penetrated California. And California is being sabotaged purposefully by its political class, this one-party Politburo that calls itself Democratic Party. I mean, you've got the – and I found that article on Park Hotels and Resorts fleeing San Francisco, says the city's path to recovery remains clouded. And so two major downtown hotels owned by Park Hotel and Resorts Incorporated, the 1,921-room Hilton San Francisco Union Square and the 1,024-room Park 55 San Francisco are both expected to be removed from the trust's portfolio due to major challenges in the California city. Well, basically, the street's now too unsafe to walk. And they don't – Park Hotels and Resorts no longer wants the liability of having these two properties in their portfolio. This past week, we made the very difficult but necessary decision to stop debt service payments on our San Francisco CMBS loan. We believe it's in the best interest for Park stockholders to materially reduce our current exposure to the San Francisco market. Crazy stuff, but let's listen to that second part from the clip, Mr. Producer, clip three.
Right. I'm wondering if, you know, other guests that I've interviewed have been concerned about things like the Communist Chinese establishing an actual beachhead in California, for example, and then landing craft there. I mean, we would hope that the U.S. Navy would do its job and stop that. But these days, who knows what Austin is up to or what Biden is up to? And isn't it possible that our military forces might be ordered to stand down and not defend America?
Well, let's do a little scenario there. First of all, my friend Jeff Nyquist, who I know you know, Jeff, he envisions the most likely scenario, the Norway example. In 1939, hundreds of German soldiers went to Norway pretending to be students and business people. And their uniforms and weapons were already pre-positioned, waiting for them to put on when the balloon went up, which, of course, they did. It's the dream of every general is to have your men already behind enemy lines before the war starts.
Right.
And that's most likely already happened. We don't know how many are here. We don't know what their weapons are. Chinese presence in Mexico, and Nyquist makes the point that there's a cooperative effort right now between the criminal drug cartels in Mexico and the communist Chinese to cooperate to meet mutual goals. The goal of the cartels, obviously, to make buckets full of money, and the Chinese to do what was said by the Chinese defense minister. The speech is at my website at thelibertyman.com. the speech from the top general, the Chinese defense minister, meant only for other top Chinese military officials, not even for the Chinese people, where he says the goal is to capture the lower 48 and call it Free China and have no Americans present anymore. They intend to kill off all Americans. That's the goal. And everything being put in place would be exactly what would be needed to accomplish that goal, Mike.
Yeah, that's what's extraordinary. And, you know, of course, we have to bring in our audience is aware of the biological weapons that have been deployed already against the United States.
That's right.
Population and its military.
And continue.
Exactly. And it looks like a genocidal operation.
And well, look at where the focus was for the vaccines, the COVID vaccines. Pretty much 100% of the American military received the clot shot, the COVID vaccines. Almost all police officers, almost all firemen, state troopers, almost everybody in the healthcare profession. Everybody you would need in normal times, and everybody would also need if there was a war, have gotten something that is disabling them and killing them. The war is already in motion right now, Mike, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine right this minute, because I noticed that really reporting on this, but it appears.
Thanks. So that was a lot to unpack, but we've all on this broadcast and others, we've already kind of looked into this for the last, you know, months and months and months. When you're talking about all of our first responders, all of our military assets being purposefully nailed with this stuff. And look, we know that there's different lots. We know that the handling of this stuff, if it was improper, probably negates some of the more wicked aspects of this. And we can only hope and pray to the creator that, you know, in his mercy, that the designs of the wicked will be confounded. And so a lot of people hopefully dodged a bullet through spiritual or through just luck or mishandling of the stuff, which kind of makes it more inert, let's say. You got to hope. I mean, I know a ton of people that have taken this stuff, and there's been some things around me, you know, that are highly questionable as far as health events that have happened to people, and I've talked about it on the air, but not to the point yet where, you know, like when you watch these various videos on various platforms and you listen to certain doctors and people with, you know, anecdotal evidence and that sort of thing, you're like, well, damn, they're witnessing some crazy stuff. It's not that bad around me yet. But, you know, you wonder if there is that payload that's embedded in there that can be awakened by some sort of exterior manipulation or not. So we just have to, you know, remains to be seen. But that was some pretty interesting wargaming there about, you know, and I made this note to myself over the week when I'm talking about this invasion. Remember, the North American Union is still in play here. The 10 kings of the world, okay, that are all going to be of one mind and give their basically their authority to the beast, you know, the Trilateral Commission having this world carved up into 10 regions, other organizations also purposefully in kind of an evil spiritual spell, if you will, by using the Bible in a backward sense, by like, yeah, well, okay, we'll cut the world up into 10 pieces in sort of a witchcraft way. And so we have to realize that this is still in play, you know, to take down the majority white Canada and the United States, flood these countries with people from all over the world, create this Soviet kind of omelet that has to be managed by an ultra-strong central government. Something that we still have to, you know, keep in mind. Smithfield pork, remember that? It was big news back in 2013. 10 years ago, China, they bought Smithfield Foods, which is the biggest pork producer in the U.S. Well, it's a group called WH Group, formerly known as the Shuanghui Group. Okay, publicly traded Chinese multinational meat and food processing company headquartered in Hong Kong, sometimes also known as the Shinway Group in English-speaking countries. The country's businesses include hog raising, consumer meat products, flavoring products. Oh, I wonder what's in there. How many aborted, who knows what, and logistics. It's the largest meat producer in China. So anyway... And then we're hearing these reports about the pork supply already since 2018 being shot up with the quote-unquote suite of technologies that goes under the umbrella term mRNA. Okay? So it's I just kind of made that connection. I was like, you know, I keep seeing these videos and reading the articles about the pork supply already being hit up with this gang of witch's brew called mRNA by, you know, and this thing's bought up by China 5 years earlier than that, 2013. So I figured I would throw that out there just kind of to jog everybody's memories that, hey, you know, you got this strange bedfellow relationship with the Chinese and our National Institutes of Health and NIAID and Fauci, Jesuit Fauci, and all of that strange stuff with all that. And so I find that fascinating. Now, let's see here. Oh, Mr. Producer, let's get clip 6 ready. Now, I've got a couple sections of this. This is from the movie Final Days that Stu Peters and them put out. And this right here is Dr. James Giordano, another Jesuit, DARPA guy, Georgetown guy. He's more onto the kind of biological tech side of the house and really these military applications. So go ahead and play that first part of clip 6. All right.
Is it that matter which exists on a scale of 1 times 10 to the minus 9th? Very, very small. Smaller than a cell. And we can manufacture nanoparticulate matter can be stabilized for distribution. If you're not aware what nanoparticulate matter is, it's that matter which exists on a scale of 1 times 10 to the minus 9th. Very, very small. Smaller than a cell. And we can manufacture materials that have discrete properties that can be controlled by virtue of bioengineering and their physical chemistry. To auto-aggregate, to be able to aggregate in particular areas based upon their biological and or chemical sensitivity. But now we go one step further. Most recently, just a few weeks ago, it was announced that you could then aerosolize nanomaterials. And go one step further, I can create small robotic units, controllable robotic units at the nanoscale, and that these too can be aerosolized to create a nanoswarm of biopenetrable materials that you cannot see, that can penetrate all but the most robust biochemical filters, that are able to integrate themselves through a variety of membranes, mucous membranes, and wherever, mouth, nose, ears, eyes, can be then uptaken into the vascular system to create clumping, can affect the vascular system of the brain, or can directly diffuse into the brain space, and these can be weaponized. And they can be done in such a level that their presence is almost impossible to detect, and as such, the attribution becomes exceedingly difficult to demonstrate.
They were released in targeted areas, including a nursing home in Kings County, Washington, Remember, this area is home to some of the most important companies in the world. Names that you know, like Microsoft, Amazon, Starbucks, Alaska Airlines, and F5 Networks.
In New York City.
Governor Cuomo just announced the first confirmed case in New York.
And then forward it to that second part. Now, I'm looking at his couple of his books. Hardcover, $131. Scientific and Philosophical Perspectives in Neuroethics, a book from 2010. And he's another one. Hardcover, $158.10. Neurotechnology in National Security and Defense, Advances in Neurotechnology. So this guy's books, if you want to get, you know, some hard copies of it, yeah, you're going to pay a little bit of money. All right, so let's play that second part.
Imagine a world where we can do computation inside living cells.
The problem that we're trying to solve is really trying to have a more sophisticated diagnosis that can happen automatically inside cells.
Imagine a biological computer that operates inside a living cell.
The type of work that they're doing is essentially they're trying to sense, analyze, and control molecular information.
In this project, we're trying to use DNA as a programmable material.
DNA is highly programmable, just like a computer, and we can program a whole range of complex behaviors using DNA molecules.
So there's one specific patent that I think it's very important for every American citizen to see, and it's patent number US95392102B2. It was issued on January 10th of 2017. The patent is entitled Vaccine Nanotechnology, and in Section 9, it discusses the vaccine nanotechnology that can deliver molecules. In some embodiments, the small molecule is a toxin. The toxin is from a chemical weapon, an agent of biowarfare. This is a utility patent for the pegylated lipid nanoparticles that are in these, what they're calling COVID-19 vaccines. It is a utility patent for that nanotechnology to be used as a bioweapon. So Pfizer entered into a contract with the Department of Defense, the U.S. Army, in July of 2020. And the contract was to manufacture a vaccine that was capable of providing protection against the SARS-CoV-2 threat and related coronaviruses. So the purpose was to create an mRNA vaccine that would protect against SARS-CoV-2 infection and the variants. As you go through this contract, though, under the Chemistry Manufacturing Control section, they go through the manufacturing process. Much of it is blacked out for the lipid nanoparticle formulation. They discuss how the lipid nanoparticles must adhere to good manufacturing practices, so they must not be contaminated. Well, in 2017, the FDA published guidance called Classification of Products as Drugs and Devices. And they classify nanoparticles, they classify them as devices because they can perform their functions inside the human body without being dependent on chemical reactions inside the human body. As you continue to go through the contract under the manufacturing development plan, that Pfizer will describe the manufacturing process for the vaccine product to ensure conformity with the Food and Drug Consumer Protection Act, Title 21-351-A2B. That's alarming because 21 U.S. Code 351-A2B is the good manufacturing processes for devices. Specifically, the term device is an instrument, an apparatus, machine, or a contrivance that is intended to affect the structure of any function of the body of a man or other animal, and does not achieve its primary purpose through chemical action within the body. So Pfizer has to adhere to the manufacturing practices for electromagnetic devices in their Operation Warp Speed contract. Nobody was told they were injected with electromagnetic devices.
Physicians from Kamisaw.
You can stop it there. The potential here, as far as different scenarios that could be played out, if this nanotechnology that Giordano and all these people brag about, genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology. But the nanotechnology part of it is basically you have these this stuff that is so small that my microscope can't even detect it, but yet has the programmability and the machine-like behavior to do whatever the controller of this nanotech says to do within your human body. Remember that movie from, I think it was the 60s or 70s, where they, these scientists, they get miniaturized way down and they go into the body, the bloodstream of this person, and I can't remember what was a very important person, like a president or something, to try to heal them or, you know, get them to fix whatever they had going on. But it was a movie I remember from way, way back as a kid, where this group of doctors, and then, you know, with the cheesy cinematography back then, but they went into the bloodstream and they almost get killed all these different times by different systems in the body. That was a huge movie back in the day, and I can't remember the name of it, but this is what basically nanotechnology is. It's like machines that are so small that they, and then they're going, who are these machines obeying while they're in your body or mine? That's the question. How are they manipulated? Is it through these 5G systems that all got miraculously put in at warp speed during the lockdowns? It's pretty fascinating. And is this just a kill shot? That's what we really have to kind of, you know, kind of worry about. Now, let's see. We're coming up on the top of the hour, but you know, the Canada fires thing, okay? There's so many people talking about these fires, and after the top of the hour, I'm going to play a clip, and then we'll talk about the possibilities, you know, of what's happening here. Because unfortunately, you got the climate change agenda in here, but you've also got like your Extinction Rebellion type Antifa types, you know, acting probably in concert with these WEF penetrated cabinets, as Klaus Schwab likes to talk about, and pushing people into these, or attempting to push people into, out of the wilderness and into these panopticon smart grid cities that resemble something out of like Total Recall, while they had those little cities on the moon. That's what we're dealing with right now. Or on Mars, excuse me. All right, we'll see you guys on there after the top of the hour.
Rocks and a mortar, lights out in the dirt. They laid me this path, no direction but hurt.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.